You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
6 minutes after 10. Obviously, there have been a case in the news lately, but a case that is a wonderful basis for you and I to have a wider conversation about patterns of experience in corporate when it comes to packages, not just salary, but salary is the starting point for the next hour, but discrepancy in terms of how we are rewarded and remunerated for the work that we do in the economy. There are gendered differences, there are racial differences. You will remember the latest case, and we've reached out to some of the people involved here, but this case is now, in fact, going to the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration. So not everyone is ready to speak just yet. But that is the case of Andile Ngcaba, who's the ex-Dimension Data chairman, who, of course, it has come to light that, in fact, there were long-term incentive schemes that he did not get on his alleged, his version of the story anyway, that he says that some of his white counterparts, including juniors to him, in fact, had been getting, also adding that by being excluded, this amounts to a form of institutional racism that Andile Ngcaba had suffered. So we're paying close attention to that particular case. You would also remember, of course, the Massmart case involving Patuxola Maqavana. And that was a particularly, I think, a heartbreaking example of this kind of discrimination that we have to deal with. There you have someone who's doing their absolute best, first-time degreed professional in the family, and you are very proud of your achievements, only to discover that something like 4,000 rand more was being earned by a white counterpart of yours for exactly the same productivity levels as you. And that case, of course, also going to the CCMA. So those are the two case examples that set the scene for us. What are your experiences? Have you had such experiences in your place of work? How has it been dealt with? How did it even come to light? How did you even know? Because one of the difficulties with this conversation is obviously knowing what is truth and what is just perception. So the lines are going to be open throughout on 011-883-0702 and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Okay, so we're talking about discrepancies in pay, but discrepancies more broadly in the packages in terms of how we are rewarded for the work that we do. I want to introduce two people that are my guests for this conversation, Jean Builders. We've been doing fascinating, disturbing data that comes out of it, but fascinating research around this. Jean is the managing director at Analytico. Jean, thank you so much for making time for us.
Hi there, Subas. Thank you very much for having me.
No, I really appreciate it, and all the cooperation with my producer leading up to the show, and sure. Also author and journalist Rebecca Davis, who has written on this. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's always wonderful having you on.
Thank you, Subas.
Jean, I'm going to start with you. It's so difficult to know what one's colleagues get paid because these things are never transparent. I have no clue what Stephen Kolani gets. I have no clue whether we get more than Azania as a woman. And if we do, on what basis that is the case. How do you guys go about doing this kind of research so that we have robust data? And what does the data say in South Africa along race lines and along gender lines?
Sure. So what we've done, we've built a statistical model to produce certain demographic parameters of what different people earn. So we're able to say, for instance, what does a white married Christian female in Pretoria earn? So we can go really in-depth into the data. The data we get from Stats SA, so that's how we process it, and it's the only form of large sources of data in South Africa. But that data does show that there are wage inequality trends in South Africa.
So let's go through that. I mean, if we compare, for example, white professionals with black professionals, do we know respectively what these two categories earn in terms of median earnings?
Yes. You see, the danger with broad categories are that there's a lot of latent effects that can occur within the economy. But with regards to white professionals, the median earnings that we produced in the beginning of this year was 22,000 versus black professionals of 8,000. But they're in saying that there are certain fair discriminatory practices, such as stipulated in the Equal Work for Equal Pay Code of Practice, that can actually explain the picture a bit better.
What do you mean by that?
So, for instance, a factor that relates to income is tenure. Now, if we just go and broadly say, does the white population of professionals earn more? The median tenure for white professionals is 89 months at one job versus 49 months for the African professional. So that also has an impact on earnings. But even if you keep everything constant, there still remains a wage gap. And interestingly enough, the biggest wage gap actually lies between white females and white males. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to get to some of those intersections that I think are so interesting and the subcategories that you are talking about. Sure. I want to get the gender stat at a high level out of the way as well. Not out of the way. I mean, I want us to put it on the table for very clear discussion. Between male professionals and female professionals, respectively, what are the median earnings?
So a male professional's median earnings is about 13,500 and a female's median earnings is 12,000. So there's also a discrepancy that occurs there.
Okay. So obviously this is shocking and completely unacceptable, both along gender lines and along racial lines. That said, just looking at the figures here, and I've got the slide that you're talking about in front of me, it seems like the problem is particularly bad along racial lines, even more so than gender lines.
Yes, yes. But the thing that's more concerning is, from an organizational aspect, is racial differences have been studied, gender differences as well, but the solutions for gender difference pay should have been implemented already, if you understand what I'm saying, because it's, yeah.
Mm. Rebecca, I want to bring you in here. You know, there was something interesting that Jean had said here, that the stats that we're talking about doesn't tell the full story, because there are salaries that are pegged, for example, to how much time you spent in the workplace. But of course, the reality is that you, as you know, and this is partly why you wrote about this, is that opportunities to be in charge of major projects, for example, that then may become the benchmark for a salary increase or for a bonus, a windfall at the end of the year, those things are often done in a way that discriminate particularly against women, but also against black employers. Can we talk about how the silent or not so silent dynamics of institutional racism and gender experiences sometimes give people the fake excuse to say, ah, no, but Eusebius has been here for like 18 years. Bex has only been here for 2 years. So why do you expect her to get the same salary?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of factors going on here, Eusebius. And it's hard to talk about the gender pay gap as a kind of thing in isolation without looking at these. So one of them is the fact that often women end up being paid less for the same work as men because they are responsible for childcare, for instance.
Yes.
So they have to, by definition, take on jobs which allow them more time flexibility, perhaps time to leave work, to pick up kids and so forth, or to carry the kids, obviously, when they're pregnant and so forth. And as a result of this, they receive, as you say, perhaps less juicy assignments, less prestigious projects, because the assumption, whether real or false, on the part of managers is that they're not going to be able to put in the hours that allow them to carry out that job to the standard that a man would be able to.
Absolutely. 15 minutes after 10, I'm going to take a bit of a break here. I want you to call in. I can see from my tweets that this resonates with a lot of you. What have been your experiences in the workplace, both in terms of salary as in the cash component, but perhaps also other incentive schemes? Have you found yourself in a situation where you thought you have an organizational culture that is very fair, only for it to come to light that, in fact, there are clear differences in how you are rewarded or not, just because you're a woman or you are black or, heaven forbid, a black woman. 18 minutes after 10, we are looking at patterns of remuneration and rewards in corporate South Africa and looking at the gender discrimination that happens as well as the racial discrimination that happened, asking why is this the case? What are the drivers behind it? And then hopefully at some point we'll get to the question, what can we do about it? Let's take some of your calls. Elaine in Bedford View, thank you so much for calling, Elaine. What do you want to say?
Yes, Eusebius, I'll speak very quickly. what happens is that somebody feels that someone of a different race, it can be black or white, feels that somebody else is getting more money for what he thinks is the same job. And I'm just using he, just for example. But what he has not found out is the qualifications of the person that he's complaining about. Because if you've got qualifications, you spent money, you might have had to borrow it, and you spent time, and you know yourself what it's like. You've got to study, pass your exams. Now, that is taken into account in a job. It looks as if you may be doing the same job, but in fact, the person who's got qualifications looks at life in a different way.
Okay. I want to go straight to what Elaine is talking about, John. I mean, there's an interesting stat from the South African Institute of Race Relations, and I know that they also rely a lot on government stats, so there should be, I think, some synergy between your sources and theirs, but you can react to it. Mm-hmm. They have told us that white South Africans take home, and we're now talking about the household, something like 6 times more pay than black people. And this is 22, 23 years after the end of apartheid. That is an absolutely horrific, horrific statistic. Firstly, do you agree with that statistic before we ask Elaine's question whether there are innocent drivers behind it?
Well, it's possible. I can't comment on the accuracy of the statistics per se, but yeah, it's definitely possible. The white take-home in household income is much higher than a black household income. You can just see it in our everyday living in South Africa. It speaks for itself.
Rebecca, now, I know you and I are humanities graduates. We're not number crunchers, but at least at the narrative level, what Elaine says bothers me a little bit, because there's some truth in what she says, but it also obscures the way in which discrimination against women and against black people work, right? So, yes, you can bracket out or control for things like formal education and for years of experience. How do we solve the problem of getting on the same page about what is reality? We can't talk about solutions if we disagree about the nature or size of the problem. But there are many people who might pick up the phone and do what Elaine does and say, yeah, you see, Biz, there appears to be a problem, but it's only an apparent problem, not a real problem. If you really want to fix the problem, go speak to Blade and my NG to improve the education system.
No, it is a very real problem. And I just want to talk to what Elaine, I think your caller's name is Elaine, said. And that is that even when it comes to qualifications, there are discrepancies in pays that simply cannot be explained away. For instance, in one investigation that I carried out for a South African magazine, I came across the case of a woman working in mining, aged 37, who found out that her junior male colleague was being paid more than her, despite the fact that she had a master's degree and 8 years' experience in the industry. He had just one degree, an undergraduate degree, and 3 years' experience. Hmm. So even when it comes to qualifications, I reject the fact that that is always, an innocent driver of what's going on here. But then, of course, there are the intangibles, as you say, when it comes to both people of color and women. And one of them, when it comes to women, certainly, is just the notion that work done by women is not valued as highly as work done by men. And this was the result of a study by Cornell University in the U.S. last year, which found that when women enter certain industries in greater numbers, so, for instance, tech or computers, etc., the average pay falls, which is extraordinary. Mm. So it's the case that literally you see women coming in and suddenly the job is not worth as much. I mean, how do we explain that away by anything other than underlying sexist assumptions?
I think that's absolutely spot on, Jean. Before we talk about how one can deal with these structural injustices in the economy, precisely on Rebecca's conversation she's just started, do we know how some of this data come out in particular industries, for example, firstly, and secondly, at different levels of the organization? Because the case that's currently in the spotlight of Andile Ngcaba, I've seen many black professionals, women responding, saying, come on, this guy must sit down. He's earning millions anyway. And by the way, sidebar, what did he do for black people in his leadership position? But that's another conversation. So it made me wonder, I wonder where in the typical organogram it's worst, at the top, at the bottom, middle management. Can you break it down for us first? Firstly there, and secondly, if you have the information, which industries are the worst?
Personally, I think middle management and supervisory positions. I think your executives, there is potentially a lot of fronting that does occur. And at your entry level, unskilled workers, there is also a lot of inequality. With regards to gender, I think the retail industry has got the biggest, from our the data analysis that we've done, the retail industry has got the biggest gender gap. But I think there should be more middle management people of color and women in middle management supervisory positions. Because from an organizational perspective, those are the individuals who has an impact on the performance ratings of the majority of the organization.
Okay, I'm going to pick up on that point a little bit later. Let's take a few more calls. Lots of people are fascinated by what you and Rebecca are saying. Khomotso, good morning and welcome.
Morning, Fabius. I want to put it across that I'm neither misogynistic nor intending to touch on sunny territories. But nature dictates that there are two sexual categories, being a male and a female. But today's South Africa puts too much emphasis on the disadvantages pertaining to women, but less is said about people with disabilities. And my view is that being a woman is either of the two that is existent. Therefore, I think the emphasis is rather misplaced, because the people living with disabilities didn't choose to be where they are, right? It is just nature that eventually led them to where they are. But even a subject that is general focuses entirely on what women are being subjected to, rather than opening up and objectively looking at it, inclusive of people living with disabilities. To me, women can do just as much as anyone else can do, but people with disabilities are limited, in some instances even limited to enter the labor market, rather entering labor markets through learnerships and the likes, and eventually not even getting to their full potential. Admittedly, there are companies that are trying to sort of level the playing fields, but a lot still has to be done in all the fields that one can think of. There's hardly a person living with a disability that is making it. But there's a lot of women that are out there getting a lot of money and getting a lot of popularity just by how they dress with little knowledge of the content at hand. So I challenge the scope of media to be rather open-minded when we discuss certain things. Let's pause a little bit and ask ourselves the question. Are we pushing a particular agenda, or are we pushing transformation across all sectors? Because to me, the transformation of women on their own is nothing if there's other people living with disabilities who are graduates and still at home, or who are graduates just doing entry-level jobs like picking papers in the offices and not being optimized according to what they know. So until we get there, the subject around women and this and this and that, to me, it's nonsensical. Thank you.
No, hold on. Don't say thank you and put the phone down. I'm going to engage you on this critically. Can I both agree with you but also challenge you? There are many categories of people that are, as groups, discriminated against in society. People with disability are completely off our radar in the media. We don't talk enough about discrimination on the base of disability and ableism in the workplace. We did that once on the show, and once is just not enough. There is, for example, and I want to underscore the truth of what you are saying, Khomotso, there's this tendency either of not employing people with disability, or when you do, you will find that the person who has a disability parks off at reception for 20 years as if they don't have a brain, and they can't do complicated things like technology and IT and, you know, work in finance on the sixth floor of the building. So you are absolutely spot on.
Hold on
one second.
I'm asking you to challenge me then, because you've been literally agreeing with me. I'm rather saying that in the interest of time, could I ask you to challenge me?
No, because I will say what I want to say. You're not going to tell me how to say it. What you are saying is so important that I do want to underscore it. I'm getting to challenging you. I mean, the fact that you're fighting for people with disability doesn't mean I'm not going to challenge you. In order to render people with disability visible, it doesn't mean that you must first start off by being glib about how women who do not have disabilities are discriminated against. That's the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yes, if we could recall what I started off with, I mentioned that to me, being a female, it's not a condition. It's either or, it's a given. But now, the point at which the society has seemingly taken the cause to address gender issues. It's more about women this, women this, women this, women that. But when exactly are we going to get to a point where we find people living with disabilities taking roles that they themselves can equally execute or excellently execute by the fact that they are limited physically and otherwise?
No, I agree with that. Rebecca, how do we deal with this Olympics of discrimination?
Well, I was about to say, I mean, first of all, I find it interesting that the minute women are mentioned, disabled people are also mentioned, because it's doing what the government does, of course, which is to collapse women and people with disabilities into the same category, which is, you know, offensive to both groups, frankly. And then, I mean, I don't think we should let Komatsu get away with some very sexist statements.
Absolutely.
Coming out there. For instance, he said that women are getting a lot of money and popularity based on what they wear. I mean, would Komatsu feel it's come to a power to make the same kind of, as you say, glib statements about people with disabilities? I mean, it's just a case of whataboutery. Yes, of course, we should be talking more about women, with people with disabilities in the workplace, but we're not. We're talking about women who face very real challenges in addition in the workplace.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
25 minutes before 11, we're trying to understand the drivers behind gender and racial discrimination when it comes to salaries in the workplace. And then what are we going to do about it? And I've got two wonderful guests with me whose insights I hope you've been enjoying as much as I have. Jean Beelders, who is the Managing Director at Analytico. And Jean, by the way, I mean, I sort of tweeted the one slide. Yeah, a lot of people want information. Maybe we'll get that at the end. They're intrigued by the full spectrum. I have obviously just hopefully enticed them to listen to the entire show. We can't tweet every minute, otherwise I'm not going to be present in the conversation. And then Rebecca is also with me, Davis, author and journalist. Mamosi, good morning.
Good morning, Eusebius. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. What do you want to share with us?
Oh, gosh, just listening to the discussion got me in a bit of a frustrated mood. It happened to me. I am a qualified engineer as well as an auditor. So working for my previous employer, I found out running internal audits within the organization, I had to follow up on a trail of previous opened issues, and I came upon my colleague's file, which was one of the non-conformances that I had to close out, only to find out that between me and him, same level, we started the company the same time. I have an engineering qualification. He doesn't. He comes from a South African police service industry. And there was a 15,600 difference, monthly difference in our salary. I'm black, young. At the time, I was 30. And the age difference between me and him is 12 years. And it got me really frustrated because I was thinking, that's a massive gap. Of a salary, and I have the qualification, and I've been in the engineering industry as well, so I have more experience within the engineering fraternity. And I posed the question to my manager, and I was told it's because of my age.
Wow.
Which I still do not believe to this day, really. And it really gets to you. It gets you frustrated, and it's demoralizing as well.
And how did you respond to them then pulling the age card?
I was pretty frank. Look, I said it exactly how I felt, obviously in a very professional manner, stating I don't feel that that is the actual reason behind it, because on the job spec, it stated clearly the criteria for the role is basically skill and experience. It had nothing to do with age. So this whole age card was not the issue. And I was told if I push this further, it would be taken to HR. I might just undergo a disciplinary hearing. But it never got to that because I did raise it. And eventually I figured, look, I'm just going to leave the company. And I found something better, and I was paid for my worth. So it is actually real in the industry, and it's frustrating, especially when you're a young black woman within the industry.
Sure.
It's frustrating. 15,600, that's a massive.
That
massive
is absolutely
difference.
Massive, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing your story. I'm so very sorry for what you had experienced. Sean, what does the law say? Does the law say it is compulsory to pay people equally, or is that a matter of the values and the corporate conscience of the company that you work with or for? Sean?
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Let's say we keep everything consistent. So we have two people applying for the same job.
Yeah.
Right? With the same tenure requirements, same qualification requirements, and so forth. Same job, they should get paid equally. However, in the case of your caller, you're also not allowed to discriminate on age. So just by the fact that they actually told her that is, they are discriminatory. And another fact that I could have potentially asked your caller was, for instance, if he was at the organization for 12 years and she was at the organization for 5 years, obviously organizations do reward commitment. Organizations do reward commitment. So that's possibly what could have happened there. But I don't want to venture into
Let's go there, because I think we need to keep it real. I mean, numbers are great, but we need to keep the softer realities real. Because, Rebecca, the thing about rewarding commitment is that you're actually just rewarding the old boys club. That's what you are doing.
Mm.
I mean, you can, and I want to bring you in here, Rebecca. Let's take you as an example as a journalist. You studied linguistics. You have, and I'm biased, I admit my bias, because I also know you as a very... that is not as self-reflexive when you respond to my question. But you can be brilliant with on day one, and someone can be useless despite being there for 10 years. So the language around loyalty, rewarding... hegemonic tendencies are perpetuated over a long period of time. Rebecca?
I think that's right. And I also think there's something else we need to take into account here, and that is the propensity of women to undervalue themselves. So if you are a woman going into a job interview and you're asked what your salary expectations are, there's a lot of research to show that women will often ask for less than a man would in this situation.
Mm.
And then, of course, that is what your salary is pegged at. So even if you do stay at that company for a decade and you're given incremental raises, you will still be at a disadvantage to the man who walked in there and said, this is what I'm worth, and I know it. And again, what that comes down to, you see, there's a socialization, it's, you know, the overarching patriarchal structure, because as, you know, pushy or difficult or bitchy. And that's something that men seem to do a lot better, to be frank.
And it's the same with many black employees. You're not going to get HR telling you, no, Deneo, why are you telling us that you want 8,000 rand to be a technical producer when, in fact, Joe Soap is getting 30,000 rand? And even when HR or your boss is a black person, they may be very keen to deliver to the shareholders the smallest kind of cost structure. And there, Jean, your stats can do nothing. There we have a deeper societal problem, as Rebecca says, right, around socialization, valuing yourself, your negotiating skill. And whether or not you have a company in which you genuinely in the leadership structure have champions for reducing inequality.
But that's exactly why it's important to have people of color in your supervisory management roles, because they've got greater access to more employees, more direct access to more employees. And also helps the organization to diversify its perceptions of each other. But sometimes
they are our own worst nightmare, hey? I mean, I don't want to drag you into a blacks-only conversation here, but the truth of the matter is that sometimes black bosses are just as bad as white bosses. They don't always become the champions for black people. In the same way in which someone can be the new woman managing director of Analytico, it doesn't mean they're going to be the ones taking care of Rebecca, the new woman that has just entered the firm right at the bottom.
Yeah, but yeah, that's exactly like saying if you're bad at your job, you're bad at your job without bringing race or gender into it. So, but the factor that the reason why I'm saying more people of color in your supervisory roles is the fact that performance ratings, that's where the tricks of the trades are being utilized. I can tell you now, there's not a lot of employees that know exactly how their performance bonuses are calculated, how their performances are evaluated, what metrics are required, and what they should achieve in a given financial year for the organization. And that is where, this has been proven. We've got conscious and unconscious bias towards our own race and gender.
Yes, yes.
And that's not necessarily discriminatory, because if it's unconscious, you don't know what's going on. So some of the slides that I've sent you from studies that's been done is that black and white managers will rate their subordinates higher, their own cohort higher, and black subordinates, African subordinates will rate their African managers higher. However, that's not the same for the white cohort. So the only solution to that is to have more diversified teams, so that we can understand each other's culture and method of working. Because you see in so many workplaces that people form little groups. And that you can sometimes see that these groups are racial based groups, and that's it's an unconscious thing that sometimes happens in organizations.
No, you're right, yeah, and we need to have that as a self-standing conversation, Rebecca. But let's hear a bit more from our listeners. Obviously, we can't get to all of the issues in one conversation. We've just lost John there. Moodley, you've been hanging on. Thank you so much for your patience, but welcome to the conversation. What do you want to say?
Pleasure. Morning, CBS, and your lovely guest. This is my favorite topic, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those topics that's a window through so many other things in society, isn't it?
You know, every time you read about it, you can just go on and on and on, never find the end of it. But I think I'll keep it short and sweet.
Okay.
Yeah, our education system has actually failed our nation. You know, let's look at it. The matriculants, my favorite professor, Jonathan, from the Free State, always complains about this. When students come there and they write the entry into the university, they basically can't even get entry into the university. That's why he insists, instead of wasting money, get the right students. You waste time, you waste money, you frustrate yourself, you frustrate your parents. So I think that's the basic. Generally, I think we have a very great school shortages in many, many areas. You know, I watch a lot of documentaries, and there's an old-fashioned thing called an apprenticeship. It still applies in countries like Switzerland and Germany. And I was so surprised to see females that used to be dominantly white jobs are taking on these kind of apprenticeships. So we need encouragement out there. And just to touch on two things here, when my daughter was still a young doctor at the university she studied, that university skilled them up. So when they were out of their time and they went to do their internship, she actually earned many thousands more than the normal young doctor that came out. And as for myself, during the bad old days, where others could only serve a five-year apprenticeship, we had to do it for 10 years. But all in all, it benefited me greatly, because I earned like 1.75% more than my other colleagues.
Okay, thank you for sharing that, Moodley. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll wrap the conversation to the top of the hour on the other side of this. 11 minutes before 11, a fascinating discussion. It's one that will be both, I hope, that you would have found interesting, but also inherently unsatisfying, because we don't have enough to talk about the solution space, but we're going to do our best in the next 10 minutes to ask the question, what can one do to try and begin to chip away at these realities inside corporate South Africa, where you have these discriminatory practices on the basis of gender, ableism, all sorts of other things, and also race, of course. John in Roodepoort, welcome. What do you want to say, John?
It's nice. You know, in the private sector, usually when you apply for a position, you negotiate the salary you want. You are typically asked, what do you want to earn?
Yes.
And if you are more assertive and have better negotiation skills than I have, the chances are you're going to be earning a lot more than I would be earning. Because you find that if I'm passive and I'm not assertive, I'm going to probably ask for a lower salary. And also another thing is, at the end of each year, you could get a 5-6% increase on your salary because you're more productive, And I would probably get 1% because I'm less productive.
John, let's disaggregate the two things. Productivity is a separate conversation. We can't assume that men are more productive in general and that white people are more productive in general than black people, unless we think that Mother Nature discriminates in how she dishes out our propensity to work. And I don't think that Mother Nature discriminates. Mother Nature is random in how she distributes those characteristics. The first thing you said... No, I know you're not saying that, John, but I don't want other people to mishear you. I know you are very progressive. Let's talk about your first point. You're spot on about the negotiation. Here's the complexity, not a disagreement, but the complexity. As men, we are generally socialized to be type A personalities. We are aggressive. We can negotiate. Not only do we assert our value, quite frankly, many of us as men know how to ask for more than we are worth in terms of our economic contribution to a company. Women are not socialized in the same way. So there is a negotiation problem, but I don't think that is the heart of the solution if your society is geared towards raising boys in a way where boys can demand more than they are economically worth and women typically can't, as Rebecca has described, how many women undersell themselves. So for me, the negotiation point, Rebecca, is that John is onto something, but I still think that is a symptom rather than a solution.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's only, and the point is that you'll still be working against what I described earlier, namely the negative assumptions people draw about women who push hard versus the positive assumptions they draw about women. But your previous caller, Moody, was also onto something about how early this all starts in education. For instance, the fact that little girls and little boys are often encouraged to see different careers as potentials for them. So, you know, do we encourage little girls to look at engineering as a possible career to the same extent that we do boys? Because it is also true that women in South Africa, for instance, are more likely than men to enter low-paying industries. So it's probable that if a cashier at a supermarket or a domestic worker will be female, for instance. And the question is whether we're doing enough to provide little girls with the idea that actually they can aim higher and that they can enter careers and fields which have traditionally been male-dominated.
Jean, in the companies that are the least offending when it comes to discrimination, or perhaps even not offending at all, if such exists, what do they get right? One thing that you've mentioned already is a certain level of diversity, obviously, at managerial or leadership level. Are there other indicators of whether a company is more rather than less likely to have some of these discriminatory practices?
So just coming back to your previous caller, if you're sitting in an interview and you need to be assertive about the wage you should be getting, that's not a company I would want to work for in any matter, because assertiveness shouldn't be a positive factor in an organization. Respectfulness, yes, assertiveness, not necessarily. Coming back to could you just repeat your question possibly?
Let me rather get the cat out of the bag about an hypothesis that I have. If you have a company, for example, where the conscious and unconscious biases that you hinted at are genuinely sincerely examined, where there's diagnostic work done maybe by an external organizational expert who comes into that company, then the company can begin to live the values that they normally put on their website or in the foyer of the company, but you don't necessarily see it actually imbued in the organizational practices. So I was wondering whether we can be practical about the kinds of steps that companies that do get it more right than others actually take beyond the rhetoric of saying, yeah, no, we don't discriminate, eh?
Yes, so factors that you could do, and that's what we try to advocate at Analytica as well, is to do a remuneration audit. Firstly, check if there are any gaps or inequalities that happen. And the majority of the cases, the reasoning for those inequalities that have occurred is performance ratings, right? So the less subjective the performance ratings are, the more metric-based it is and statistically based it is, the less interpretation there is for the ratee to be biased. So that's the practical application that I would recommend to organizations. And actually very few that I've seen have done it, have gotten it right.
On that, though, I mean, you know, and some researchers have pointed out to this point, Rebecca, I am very sympathetic because I think John is helping us to be very pragmatic about this, particularly with Matrix, that reduce the opportunity for explicit or implicit bias on the part of the person who's evaluating you. But there's still a problem even there when we bring in data, right? Because I can imagine someone saying, okay, I see that for 3 months last year, Rebecca was not on air at 7:02. She was off popping babies when we needed her to talk about the ANC conference. Eusebius, on the other hand, worked until the 20th of December when Nkosazana was declared the new president. Now, I mean, there, the matrix may give you a basis for ducking points off the woman that was off, quote-unquote, popping a baby, but in reality, you actually have a matrix that itself has built into it discrimination against the body of the woman.
That's right. And I would say that one of the major practical steps, if we're going to talk the realm of pragmatism, that corporates in South Africa could implement in order to level the playing field is definitely measures to do with childcare and maternity, paternity leave. And this isn't actually the responsibility only of corporates. It's a wider social, governmental problem.
Yes.
But there's no good reason why the fact is that fathers and mothers decide to be parents, but only the mothers are penalized for it in the workplace. There should be more opportunities for men, working men, to share childcare more equitably with women, because in this day and age, there is really no good reason why that burden should fall almost exclusively on women, who also want to work, by the way, who aren't necessarily, you know, just signed up for a life of saintly parenthood.
Absolutely. Rebecca, you've been incisive as always. Thank you so much for coming on. Jean Beelders, thank you so much for sharing your stats with us. I don't know whether you did so exclusively to us, but many of our listeners want to see the whole thing, especially the nerds who weren't happy with me just tweeting one slide. Where can they get more information? Or I don't know.
We actually did do a presentation for the high-level panel commission the beginning of this year. The whole YouTube video for a lot of different actual socioeconomic problems are on YouTube.
Okay, let's do this.
The entire presentation is
on YouTube. I'm going to get my team to get that from you, and then sure, I'll tweet it. To be fair to those folks who were only watching the tweets, not listening to the conversation, they want a little bit more. And I think, as Rebecca said, this is a massive, massively important issue for society. But for today, thanks so much, Rebecca, and thanks so much, John, for coming on.
Sure. Thank you very much.